one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk a little World Series. We know who's going to be in the Fall Classic. Yes, of course, the Dodgers. But after a wild Game 7, we now know they will be taking on the Toronto Blue Jays. The number one seed in the American League makes it all the way to the World Series after an absolutely soul-crushing loss by the Mariners and a franchise-altering victory by the Blue Jays. I mean, I don't know. There's not a whole lot of Blue Jays and Mariners fans listening, but if you're a baseball fan, it was quite a game and should be a pretty good World Series. We're going to talk about that. We'll preview it a little bit. We'll do a little stay or go with some of the main names on the Phillies. We'll just give our take on what we think the Phillies are going to do here with some of these guys coming up, and maybe we'll get into a little bit of a conversation about trading for Tarek Skubal, maybe, here this offseason. Joining me on this edition of the Roundtable, it's going to be a two-person roundtable, so just kind of more like, I don't know if we use a roundtable for this, for a two-person podcast. Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Yeah, Justin, I'm not sure exactly what kind of table we use for this kind of a thing, but how are you, pal?
More of a pointing and jabbing, a lot of accusations, you know, leaning, lurching, grabbing both sides of the table. Just more of a direct address like that. Yeah, I think that's what we have in store here. Jeff Hoffman and Sir Anthony Dominguez certainly getting the last laugh on this one. I bet you feel silly now, don't you? Having been a huge critic of the trade that I don't remember who we got back for Sir Anthony Dominguez, and then also not signing Jeff Hoffman, who has really been through it, following that narrative on the fringes kind of all year. He is he was unstoppable, and then he was absolutely horrible, and now he's back to people are happy to see him again. It's been a wild kind of narrative to see from as his former team.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the areas I wanted to get into when we talk about this World Series here, because both of those guys had big moments in Game 7. Sir Anthony Dominguez pitched a scoreless inning, and then Jeff Hoffman, former Philly great, comes in as the closer, looking for the final three outs in the game to send the Blue Jays to the World Series, and he goes strikeout, 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 the last one on Julio Rodriguez, throwing him nothing but sliders out of the strike zone. Rodriguez went chasing. Bitter at all? A little bit, maybe? I feel a little bitter. I mean, because that would have been nice to see that Jeff Hoffman in game one of the NLDS against the Mets last year.
It was Austin Hayes they traded Sir Anthony Dominguez.
Oh my gosh, that's right. It's the reason we forgot about that.
Yeah, all right. Well, that explains a lot. Sorry about that. No, not bitter. Relievers, I think, they're such natural drifters around baseball. They're changing teams a lot more often than any of the other players. So I think it's just easier to absorb. You know, he's been absorbed into the Blue Jays just by the passing of a single regular season. I don't really think of him as like that guy, and he could have been, and then we would be. That's like not exactly how that went down. The Phillies had, their chance to bring him back, and we could probably argue about what was the right move there exactly, but it certainly wasn't the guy they went with initially in Jordan Romano.
It wasn't choosing Jordan Romano over him. Yeah. No, that's for sure.
So that one feels silly, but now they have Duran, and I think, you know, for the most part, we're happy with him, despite his timing on deciding to walk his first run in ever recently. But regardless, yeah, I can't say I feel a lot of bitterness about Jeff Hoffman pitching in the postseason.
I mean, my bitterness isn't so much that we don't have him anymore or that we should have kept him, because I mean, I do think we should have probably tried to keep him a little bit more than it seems like we did. But
I see. You're asking what a general current of overall bitterness flowing through my veins. Yes, of course.
Just in general, sure, we all have that. But I mean, just I think like it's you did this for the Blue Jays? Couldn't have done this for us in a big spot last year? But I get it. You know,
isn't that kind of a child's way?
It is. Oh, I was gonna totally own that. It is totally a childlike bitterness. from what there's no question. That's totally 16-year-old me. You did it for us. You couldn't do it for us last year. You peed the bed last year, and now you're going to strike out the side to send a team to the World Series. And yeah, Jeff Hoffman.
Yeah, and he says, yeah, that's right. And I did that exclusively because I just decided to for this team, and I did not for yours. And that's how that works.
It was a choice. It was a choice, and he made his, and we made ours, and the Blue Jays are going to the World Series. Can't help
why
but
players
think
don't just choose
related.
To be good all the time. I have no idea. That just seems like it's completely illogical.
Hoffman with an ERA under one since September, so picking it up at the right time because it
fine.
Was an up and down year. Not a good year for him. He was worth negative wins above replacement this year for Toronto. Just throwing that out there. It's funny, like I think about this game seven that they played, and you know, obviously the George Springer home run is the moment everybody's going to remember. Very bedlam at the bankish, certainly much higher stakes. I mean, not higher stakes necessarily, but a game seven. You know, you're trailing by two runs. I mean, the season on the brink right there. If you're the Blue Jays and Springer manages after getting hit in the knee a couple of days before. People are calling it like a Kirk Gibson-like moment. It wasn't quite to that degree. I mean, he could actually walk, whereas Kirk Gibson really couldn't walk all that much. But it was just, we saw a lot of huge stars getting huge hits in huge moments. I mean, Vlad Guerrero in Game 6, George Springer in 7. Even in a losing effort, Julio Rodriguez and Cal Raleigh went deep for Seattle to give them that 3-1 lead. And so I was struck by how often in this series the best players on these teams, the star players on these teams, came through with the really big hits. And just remarking and noting that really that's only happened in two of the Phillies' last six playoff games, right? No, two of their last eight. Like the two games they won, you saw the big guys get hits, and the rest of the time, just the well was dry whenever those big guys came up in big moments. And so it was just kind of it was an eye-opening moment. Like your star players actually can have star moments.
Must be nice. I don't know. I mean, yeah. There's I feel like you're trying to put me in a bad mood with this line of questioning.
This series put me in a bad mood. I'm just gonna say it.
You know what? I'm getting that. Actually, I'm sensing that now. But I've stepped into a trap, a bitterness trap. I felt it close around my ankle, and it's just far too late for me now.
I really feel like the show sheet should have taken you where I was going on this, Justin.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This shouldn't have been a surprise.
Well, you said it to me in cutout magazine letters, and that also should have been, again, that's on me for missing the evidence there that, things were really coming apart over there. Yeah. I mean, again, you're just kind of handing that even, I don't think that even really was a question. You're just taking a little bitter little football and handing it off to me. And I have to say, yes, John, I agree that, the Phillies' best players should have come through in this series. I mean, to your point, George Springer coming up with that huge hit in Game 7, you know, the one everyone will remember, like you said. And it's easy to say, well, man, I wish the Phillies could have had a George Springer. But they do have a George Springer, and his name is Kyle Schwarber. He's played in 20 playoff series in his career. George Springer has played in 17. So they're about equally seasoned on October baseball. The impact of one swing and one at bat and the pressure that's on you. But they both have hit 23 home runs in the postseason, and they've both slugged about .540 in the postseason. Their numbers are remarkably similar in this regard. So again, the Phillies have a George Springer. He just didn't homer when they needed him to. He didn't George Springer for them. He just was quiet the way the Phillies' biggest bats were, and I mean, chalk it up as one of the big reasons that we're not talking about them right now playing in the World Series.
Gotta say, watching these games, and especially like Game 6 and 7, I don't know if my heart can take the Phillies in these kinds of games. I mean, I don't know if I got it
well,
in me
make up
anymore.
Your mind, all right? Are you upset they're not playing or not? Like,
I'm unsettled. My whole aura is unsettled at the moment.
What I tell you, you got to light some candles, all right?
Yeah.
Put on some nice whale sounds or nice rain ambiance, and just you got to come down before we do these because you're coming in hot in a lot of directions.
I'm just really enjoying baseball right now, and I think that's the takeaway. So we're gonna go. I So more than the Blue Jays winning, which is fine. I didn't really care about if the Blue Jays won. I don't care about like the connections to 1993 and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be ready to see a bunch of 93 replays?
No.
All through the World Series?
Honestly, the 93 moment that I have a harder time with now, these many years later, than the Joe Carter home run is the 15-14 game. That's mm-hmm. the one that I have the most trouble with right now. And that's what I don't want to see highlights of. If you show me Joe Carter, I'm used to it now. I've seen it enough times. We've celebrated a World Series win since then. So I've kind of had that healed a little bit. The 15-14 game is the one that I still have trouble with. I don't want to see any clips from that over the next 2 weeks.
Well, I wouldn't pay particularly close attention, because that was one of my first thoughts. Is even if the Blue Jays aren't playing the Phillies in the World Series this year, that's their last time doing it. Yeah. So they will be cutting to that during at bats and going from commercial to commercial. And oh my gosh, it's going to be everywhere.
The Seattle loss, I can't imagine a more devastating and agonizing loss. And I've been kind of floating this to a couple of friends of mine, who are lifelong Phillies fans. Like, I feel like this loss by the Mariners is worse than any loss I've ever experienced as a Phillies fan. And for a couple of different reasons. One, the Mariners here had their best opportunity in 50 years to finally get to a World Series. Forget about winning a World Series. They're the only team in Major League Baseball that has never made it to a World Series. And here they go up 2-0. By winning the first two games in Toronto. The only way they don't go to the World Series is if they lose 4 out of 5 games with 3 of them at home. And wouldn't you know, the Blue Jays, they win the next two games in Seattle. The Mariners find a way to win Game 5, and then going back up to Toronto for 6 and 7, you got a 3-2 lead. But yeah, you're going into Toronto, but that's a place you won Games 1 and 2. They yacked away Game 6. They played tight. They weren't ready to play. They made a lot of mistakes. It was they gave that game away. And then in Game 7, you're 8 outs away. You've got a 3-1 lead heading into the 7th inning, and in one swing of the bat, 50 years where you finally, you can sense it, like 50 years of frustration of never being able to cross the threshold into the World Series is right there in front of them. And George Springer slams the door shut in their face as they're on the precipice. And I just, there was a questionable managerial decision mixed in there. It did feel a lot like the 23 Phillies Diamondbacks series, although I think the Blue Jays were just as good as the Mariners. It wasn't a situation where the worst team ended up beating the better team. The Blue Jays were really, really good. I just think this was the most devastating loss I could possibly imagine. And it's worse than any loss any Phillies fan really could ever imagine. Because even in those losses in the 70s, they'd at least been to a couple of World Series before that. Like, the Mariners have never been to one, and this was their best chance to do it. There's no guarantee they get, like, as hard as they had to scratch and claw to get this far, to know that you got to start all over again next year to try and do it. I can't imagine as a baseball fan a more devastating loss than Game 7.
Well, they got to be certainly the most emotionally exhausted baseball fans right now. And for good reason. Like you said, it's really, the series itself is like, yeah, you immediately go back to, well, the Phillies, they played an equally frustrating series against an even more beatable opponent not too long ago. But adding the context of the Mariners just kind of postseason hopelessness really does like put things in perspective, as did the stories that were coming out like between Game 6 and 7 by Seattle writers. It was really interesting, given that like you'd see this Blue Jays content coming out where they'd be like breaking down how like Alejandro Kirk is going to do against like this particular Mariners starter, about how Blue Jays hitters are especially equipped to get into the Seattle bullpen, and like Seattle's big edge is Andrés Muñoz in their bullpen, and here's how the Blue Jays can attack him. And then you look over at like what's coming out of Mariners fans and writers, and you'd get headlines like "The Knife of Hope," or "Do not be careful with your heart," or "Please win," or "My grandfather's ghost cannot rest." Like, it was just the most, like, coming from such a mossy, spiritual, deep place for Mariners fans. And, you just feel like It's the cliche, like it's our year. Like it just feels like it, that things were different for Seattle, and they just, you know, they ended the same way they always have. That's utterly devastating, especially just, yeah, given the likability of this team and the high profile nature of their success this year. They weren't just supposed to be a speed bump for somebody in the first round. It was like, nope, this is the team. We've been waiting for the team, and this is them. And once again, it wasn't.
I mean, I think they do have most of the team coming back. Eugenio Suarez is going to be a free agent, but the rest of the team, but Cal Raleigh's not going to hit 60 again, you know? So you're going to have, I mean, he'll still be a great power hitting catcher, but he's not going to hit 60 again. But the pitching staff should still, I mean, most of that team should still be a contender next year. But, you know, who knows how the Astros reload? Who knows how the Rangers reload? Like, who knows what else happens in the American League? The competition might be tougher. You know, it was really a National League heavy league this year, and the American League was kind of a lot of parity. What are the Yankees going to do? You know, what are the Red Sox going to do in terms of, like, you know, American League powers and stuff like that? So it's just it was all right there. I equated it, like, in terms of, like, football terms for people. Like, do you remember the back in the 80s when the Cleveland Browns were going to finally beat the Broncos and go to their first Super Bowl? It was like, and then John Elway leads them on that 98-yard the drive, right? Like, Cleveland fans think, we finally have our Super Bowl. We're finally getting to the Super Bowl. Like, after all these years, we're getting, it's here. And then Elway drive down the length of the field was just an elongated version of the George Springer 3-run home run in that spot. And I just, I felt so awful for Mariners fans. And the Mariners, like, Cal Raleigh after the game, his eyes are just red and puffy. I don't know if you heard that clip of Julio Rodriguez as Brian Wu is being interviewed. You can hear Rodriguez just scream in agony, like he just got shot off camera. And everybody looks and they're just like, no reaction. Just like, yeah, that's right. I mean, it was just...
That was some of the rawest stuff I've ever seen in a post-playoff loss locker room. Really, captured the way that can feel, even from, like, you know, indirectly as people, as fans just watching, you just reach that level of frustration. Just, yeah, that was a wild clip. That was a very human clip.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you just kind of realize, man, it was as devastating to them, and more devastating to them. But, you know, I mean, it's their livelihoods, and they had to feel like they had it won. They had to, they had to feel like they had it won. I'm sure they were already imagining what it would be like. All right, real quick. So it's going to be Dodgers and Blue Jays. The Dodgers swept the Brewers in four games. That happened since the last time we chatted. The Dodgers allowed one run in each game of the series, 14 hits allowed total. The Brewers, I don't remember what the batting average was, but finished with the lowest team batting average in any playoff series in baseball history against the Dodgers. Given how they absolutely boat raced the Brewers, and here's an offense we talked about on the last podcast, where very different offense from the Phillies, did all the things that we've always complained, or people complained that the Phillies didn't do. They played small ball. They put the ball in play. They didn't strike out. You know, they weren't so obsessed with the home run. You know, that's what the Brewers did. They were great, great base running, great defense, and all this kind of stuff. They didn't strike out very often, and the Dodgers just made all of that moot. The Phillies obviously gave the Dodgers, they were way more of a handful against the Dodgers than the Brewers were. So, I mean, that's the question that's been going around a lot is, do you feel any better about the Phillies' performance? And I don't feel better about losing. What I will say is I now look at this series a little differently from the previous two. Like, the previous two, the Phillies kind of choked it away to worse teams. I feel like the Phillies just got outplayed by a slightly better team on this one. The Phillies really, I think, played pretty gosh darn hard. They made mistakes. They did what they do. Like, the Phillies just kind of did... even when they were winning, they did what they do in a regular season, right? They made base running mistakes, made some errors here and there, but that's just part of their DNA. They didn't fold. This, even though the offense didn't do anything in this series, it doesn't feel to me like, after watching that series against the Brewers, like the Phillies folded offensively. And I remember even watching as the series was going on, like just remarking, Dodgers are really making some pitches, man. They are just, Ohtani and Snell in those first two games just were hitting corners. Like, nothing was out over the middle of the plate for the most part. And so I feel differently about how they performed in this series. They didn't choke it away. I don't think they underachieved necessarily, especially offensively. You know, just they ran into a team that was hotter and playing a little bit better in a, But that was a superior opponent. Like, that's the billion-dollar Dodgers that they got. And they put up more of a fight than the Brewers did, for sure. And I think they put up more of a fight than maybe the Blue Jays will.
It recontextualizes what the Phillies were able to do against the Dodgers, for sure. It doesn't make me feel particularly, better about it, because if you're in the postseason, you're going to run into really good teams, and not getting outplayed is, part of the goal there. And I mean, I hear what you're saying about, like, look, the Phillies didn't roll over and they didn't choke. And I think that's accurate, but I think an interesting thing about series like this, and maybe this series in particular, is that, I think people are very forgiving of the overall shortcomings. Like when you say things like, oh yeah, they played hard, the offense didn't come through, blah, blah. But if you broke it down into the individual moments in which the offense didn't come through, each time someone would say, well, he should have done this, and he should have done that, and he should have done. And so, like, it just, when you don't zoom in like that, I think it's easier to say, yeah, I mean, they didn't, but what were they supposed to do against a superior opponent? And the answer is, in some cases, like, have better at bats, Bryce Harper. Stop swinging at everything. Or, watch some film on a guy that you're trying to, like, pick up on a mistake with. Like, just do something, because they're figuring you out enough to put more runs on the board than you. And you've got an arguably better starting pitching staff. So I get that you're at a disadvantage playing a team that's set up to be a playoff wrecking ball and is also fully healthy for the first time this season. So you're seeing this kind of like fully dominant dimension of them that maybe you didn't even get in the regular season, when you were able to handle them pretty easily at times. But overall, I can't say, that like this makes me change what I want the Phillies to do for next year.
No.
Because the outcome of this series changes a little bit given the outcome of the next series. What I do know is that the Phillies would have steamrolled the Brewers in the NLCS. And I can say that because it's nice and unprovable.
That's right.
I recognize the Phillies were playing, again, that fully weaponized team. But I think you can still find a way through each individual moment. Kirk Green can throw that guy out and you can figure it out. I don't know.
Yeah. No, for sure. Doesn't make it any less painful, any less bitter. I think you said it right. Recontextualizes the loss, and just, I think, puts it in a different category than 23 and 24, for sure. But you did mention, and I think you're right, and this kind of takes us into the next segment, which is stay or go. We're going to talk about which Phillies players we think will be back and which will be going from the 2024 team into 2025, from the 25 team into the 26 season. I can't believe it's already almost 2026. Gee whiz. Because you're right. I mean, does this necessarily change the fact that we feel like there should be a change up in the mix of the players, and that the lineup couldn't be more optimized? Of course not. I 100% agree that whatever we felt at the end of the Dodgers series initially is still in play, and it's still the way we should be feeling. So I have a list of, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I got 9 players here. 9 main players that some are under contract, some are free agents, some are under team control. They're all big names, and we're going to go through them one by one here and just talk about whether we think they will stay or whether they will go. We could talk about whether we think they should stay or go. I think we're going to probably agree on most of them. I think the more difficult things to try and suss out is what the Phillies are going to want to do with these different guys. The first one I'll start off with is Bryce Harper, and we talked about him a lot on the last podcast, especially after Dave Dombrowski made the comments that he did about Bryce Harper's season. I want to play a comment from Joel Sherman, New York Post writer, comments he made on a podcast, on the podcast Pinstripe Post, talking about Bryce Harper and the possibility of Dave Dombrowski perhaps investigating a trade possibility for Bryce Harper.
Clearly, Dombrowski's comments, Dombrowski's been around way too long to have said that without having some meaning behind
it. That's what I thought too.
I continue to wonder if the meaning is the player is unhappy with his contract, and this was a kind of side glance back at, I could take some shots here too, if you'd like me to do that. Why don't we both settle down? I mean, I don't know. Like, I that's pure speculation. Mm-hmm. But would I be 100% shocked if Bryce Harper got traded this offseason? No.
So, Joel Sherman, not 100% shocked, would not be 100% shocked, Justin, if Bryce Harper got traded this offseason.
Well, he said no, but then it also sounded like there was a question mark at the end of it.
No.
So.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. Bryce Harper is a full no trade clause. So the only way a Bryce Harper trade happens is if Bryce wants out. Maybe that's on the table. Maybe that is. I don't think so. Bryce Harper has seemingly invested his entire being into being in Philadelphia at this point. I can't imagine him wanting to pick up stakes and try something new. But we talked about it on the last podcast that something was off this year. Something was just off with his performance and his demeanor on the field. He wasn't a malcontent. It didn't seem like there was any trouble with Bryce Harper. Certainly nothing came out publicly about it. And he didn't have a bad season. He had a decent season, a very good season for most players, but not to his level. I agree with Joel Sherman in this, in that it was the Dave Dombrowski comments, what he said about Bryce Harper, caught us all by surprise that he was as direct. He didn't insult the guy, but he was also openly challenging him this offseason. And we talked about on last podcast, I think Liz mentioned something that, you know, Bryce has been wanting a contract extension. Maybe he's not happy with the current contract that he has. And, you know, this is Dave Dombrowski's way of saying you haven't earned a renegotiation. Maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know. But I guess the point is, like, if you're looking at what Dave Dombrowski said, Justin, it's unusual for him to talk about a star player this way. They've never spoken like this about Bryce Harper before. And so that's what's interesting about it.
Yeah. So, like you said, the Phillies can't trade Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper can only trade Bryce Harper.
Right.
But the other side of that is also, you know, we were afraid Dombrowski was going to get here and rip out all the prospects and trade for, you know, a bunch of veteran hitters or whatever. And it really, you know, hasn't been like that. And especially lately, he's made more like strategic and frugal moves. And
great,
so suddenly trading Bryce Harper would also just be kind of out of character for him right now. Mm-hmm. So do I think there's like an ongoing, understated Real Housewives-esque feud going on between Dave Dombrowski and Bryce Harper and his representation? I mean, maybe, but I'm more on your side where that wasn't hey, I can take shots too. Something that a characterization of those comments that I'm finding comical, thinking that like Dombrowski's getting as catty as that. And also that when the claws come out, he just makes a very like soft monotone commentary that sounds more like a challenge to get better than a threat of any kind. Like that's him like, oh yeah, I'm hating on Bryce Harper. This is a feud. I don't know. This would seem out of character for everyone involved.
Yeah.
But I guess it's something we're going to be talking about all winter.
So before we make a definitive stay or go, I'll also read you Scott Boras. What he said, he responded to Dave Dombrowski's comments.
This can only be constructive. I can't wait.
Well, give a listen. I think it actually, he said, I agree that Harper missed time due to injury and that his volume was down. But other than that, Bryce Harper is performing at an elite level on a number of characteristics that we keep track of. When you look into expected baseball stats, Harper is pretty much on par with his career averages. He's surrounded by Kyle Tucker, Fernando Tatis Jr., Bobby Witt Jr., and Rafael Devers. His barrel rate, hard hit rate, exit velocity are all in the top of MLB. His barrel rate is the same as Vladdy Guerrero Jr. and Witt Jr. His exit velocity is the same as Cal Raleigh's and Julio Rodriguez's. He also said, I don't think Dave Dombrowski or John Middleton or anybody is contemplating Bryce Harper not being a Philadelphia Philly for the rest of his career. So you can look at those. Go ahead.
Something to add here also, that if the anger here was coming from dissatisfaction with his contract, doesn't that only mean that he wants to be here longer and
longer,
the Phillies just haven't worked that out yet? So like, how does that get translated into, well, fine, I can't stay here forever, then trade me? That just doesn't, those are two like different sides of the spectrum here.
Right. Or if this is a matter of, because he did take a kind of a team friendly average annual value deal to play here. And if he feels like I want to I want to be paid a little bit more per year. You know, maybe, the, you know, and, you know, he's not going to get that from another team as part of a trade coming off the season he just had. I mean, not that it was, again, not a, he didn't have a bad season. It was just kind of a, an in the background, pretty good season. You know,
and
which
it's great to throw his name up there with all those elite players and defend his client. And yes, what turned out to be a very constructive way, I would say. But at the same time, all you need are eyes to see that he had a down year. And that Boris actually acknowledged that at all up front is also a kind of a bizarre level of transparency from somebody you don't normally get that from.
Well, the Phillies have a good relationship with Boris and all his clients, generally speaking. So I guess it's good that they are kind of maintaining that that relationship. All right. We've talked about this enough. I think I'm going to say stay. I don't think there's any way Bryce Harper's going anywhere. So, yeah, he should stay and he will stay. Trey Turner, Justin, again, big contract. You know, there's going to be people who, you know, whispering, wanting to get Trey Turner. But Trey Turner's coming off a season that had, I think, the second most wins above replacement in his career. Had a great season at leadoff and really wasn't terrible in the playoffs. That just didn't have any extra base hits to speak of. Couldn't really come through with any big hits for the Phillies in the postseason. But, you know, get in line. That's pretty much everybody. And he improved at shortstop. So I don't think they're ready to move on from him. I believe he will stay, and I think he should stay.
Trey Turner is the National League batting champion. Yeah, I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I don't think there's any particular reason to move him.
Yeah, if you're looking to change the mix, it's not happening with Trey Turner. And he also has a no-trade clause as well. All right, Kyle Schwarber, free agent. Phillies seem to want him back. They said that they're going to make that a big priority. One of the arguments against bringing Kyle Schwarber back is that it frees up the DH spot to move different players in there. You could probably just go out and get the best right-handed bat if you wanted to get more right-handed in your lineup. I guess that's Pete Alonso. I don't know that I'm jettisoning Kyle Schwarber for Pete Alonso as a replacement. But you know, I think the argument is that you free up the Kyle Schwarber money to go do other things. Now, that being said, you take a guy who hit 56 home runs out of your lineup, the only guy with more than who managed to get over 30 this year. So it sounds like everybody wants to do this, Justin. What do you think? Schwarber, stay or go? Will he stay? Should he stay?
Yes. I mean, he should stay. It's impossible to think of the Phillies, replacing that level of production or power very easily, if at all. I don't know if freeing up that money is really gonna, like, I guess I started to think as we were going through this exercise, like, all right, so who does go? Like, I feel like you got to be a little more aggressive about who goes than even the Phillies are if you're trying to, like, you know, mix things up. I don't know. I mean, if Schwarber were to go, I started looking into Murakami from Japan. Yeah. Who has left-handed power that's been compared to Kyle Schwarber's. And so in that case, you can also let Alec Bohm go, and you can make a deal there to try and improve somewhere. And then you've got Murakami at third. Well, it factors into this. And I don't know. I wrote go next to Kyle Schwarber, and I just don't buy it. Like, I'm trying to spice it up a little, and I just don't buy it. But I'm just trying to draw. This was my logical line for letting him go. You're really trying to get interesting. And the odds of the Phillies, you know, getting a Japanese player to come to Philadelphia are remarkably thin. So, like, that's not even really a plan. It's the same kind of deal with the guy we're going to talk about next, Real Muto, where it's just like, yeah, it's the solution to replacing this exists. It's probably just in an equation that I can't do right now, that I can't read right now. So, you know, isn't it just easier at the end of the day to bring back Kyle Schwarber?
Yeah, I think that's the easiest thing to do. I don't think his market is going to be as robust out there because nobody really pays DH-only players who are in their mid-30s mega dollars. He will get a big contract from the Phillies or from some other team. I think he probably would even take just a little bit less to come back to Philadelphia as opposed to go someplace else. But I think he stays. I think it's the right decision to keep him. I don't think you make yourself better by removing the best clubhouse guy in baseball and a guy who had 56 home runs. And he's not going to do that again, but you know, he's been hitting 40 plus and getting better as a hitter every year that he's been here. And the bat speed ain't going anywhere right now. So as a DH, yeah, it kind of hamstrings you with being able to put Bryce at DH or someone else at DH from time to time. But hopefully you don't need to do that a whole lot. So yeah, I keep Schwarber. I think he does stay. I think he should stay. And then JT Realmuto. The only thing I could see with JT Realmuto, Justin, is if some team was offering him 3 years. I don't know if the Phillies want to do 3 years. And there are some young catchers out there you could trade for. And I'm not talking about Adley Rutschman, because certainly that would be like the superstar. But the Dodgers have a catching prospect that's stuck behind Will Smith. Right. I mean, Will Smith isn't going anywhere. Dalton Rushing is a guy who I think has been kind of out there as somebody that could be acquired in a trade. He's a really good young hitting catching prospect. I don't know that Dodgers would trade him to Philadelphia, given that the Phillies are a big rival in the National League. Maybe there are some other young catchers out there in the minors who have more upside than Rafael Marchand that the Phillies might be targeting that they would want to go after instead of re-signing JT Realmuto. That's the only way it makes sense. Is if you're going to swing a trade for Dalton Rushing, and I don't know exactly what you'd have to give up to do that, I'd bring in JT Realmuto back, unless there's a team that's going to give him 4 years. If there's a team that's going to give him 3-4 years, would you do 3 years for JT?
Well,
like, let's say the Giants offer him 3 years. Like Buster Posey's like, yeah, come here for 3 years.
Because the concern immediately becomes there is no backup plan. Like this is my chief motivation for bringing Realmuto back is that there simply is not an answer. And like you said, Adley Rutschman, yeah, that was trendy. Remember, nobody really knows what's wrong with Adley Rutschman. That's why he's still not hitting. So, you know, do you think Kevin Long can fix Adley Rutschman? Why take that risk if you don't have to? But like you said, I also wanted to tease, you know, the alternatives to Realmuto. And I mean, you know, Cal Raleigh's signed in Seattle through 2030, but I think he's got an option in 31, and they've got a top catching prospect named Harry Ford, who's got some raw stuff. He's got some things to improve. I think defensively, he's on not as high a floor as Realmuto has, but regardless, he is considered one of the best young catchers in the minor leagues. And you know, again, what do things cost? I don't know. And if you don't feel like calculating that, just re-sign JT Realmuto, and you know, we'll move on for 3 years. I mean, if that ends up being what it takes, like, what do you want to do that, or do you want to trade for a young catcher?
And the thing is, if you sign JT Realmuto for 3 years, maybe he's your starter for one or two, and he's your backup for the third year, you know, as you're bringing somebody younger along. The only way I let him go is if I can trade for one of those guys. And I don't know those guys cost a lot. Those guys, catching prospects cost a lot.
Yeah. And if you don't go that route, then what are you doing? You're bringing in like Victor Caratini or something, you're just worse. You're just way worse at catcher, and you don't have a plan for the future.
Right. Totally agree. So I think he stays too. So, I mean, your top four, Harper, Turner, Schwarber, Realmuto.
I know. This is what I was talking about. Like, everybody went into this offseason talking about, we got, you know, change. We want change. And the Phillies were like, not really happening because of the managers coming back and the coaches are coming back. And now we're going to the players. And suddenly, you know, going down the list, it feels, and I know we may have a couple different answers here, you know, moving forward with this list. But, you know, it feels like it's people reluctant or finding that it's much more difficult to make that kind of change. And I guess I'm just saying, at what point do you trade Jim Thome and just kind of say, this is change is happening because we decide the future will be this. And then, you know, in that case, it works out with Ryan Howard. But people were mad that Jim Thome was gone at that point. People were mad that Cliff Lee got traded. I don't know. Like, sometimes you do something to change things that is, and part of that is just going to tick people off. So I don't know. When do you make that decision that change is so necessary that it's worth doing something more polarizing?
Well, you let Jason Wirth go and think that Dominic Brown's going to come in and be the guy. And, you know, then you have to trade for Hunter Pence. And then that doesn't really work out. And meanwhile, Jason Wirth goes on to have a pretty solid 4 or 5 years with the Nationals after that. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yep.
You have to have something in place ready to go. Like Ryan Howard was something in place, right? I mean, rookie of the year, you know, You trade Jim Thome for your rookie of the year. Makes all the sense in the world. They don't really have that if they decide not to re-sign JT Realmuto at catcher, and really some of these other guys too. All right, now we start getting to some, I think, some more interesting names. Harrison Bader, I think, is a really interesting name. He's obviously going to opt out of his mutual option. If you're looking to try and get more right-handed in this lineup, Harrison Bader did a phenomenal job while he was here. It really just depends, I think, what his market is. If there's a team out there willing to give him 4 years at like $12 to $14 million a year, I don't know, man. I mean, he's been a bad player until this past season, and I like the cut of his jib and all that, but man, if it's a 1 year deal or like a 2 year deal, I could do that, but man, if he's getting 3 or 4 years from somebody else, I'm not hitching my horse to that wagon. So, I mean, and I think he's going to get that because there's not a lot of great options on the outfield market. So I think he's gone. I'd say go for Harrison Bader.
High defensive floor at a crucial position. The bat's going to come and go. So I live with it at like, you know, 2 years, 20 million, 24 million. But you're right. 4 years would be too much of an investment in Harrison Bader because, you know.
What if it's 3.36? What if it's 3 years and 36 million?
That feels like the overpay that gets the job done. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That feels like the Phillies are overextending a little bit, but they value, I don't know. I mean, I really value his center field defense and that he is a center fielder and what he's able to do out there, which means, you know, he's not excused from being an offensive liability, but you can also accept that he's going to be, you know, another one of these guys who's hot for a little and then not for a while and then hot for a little and not for a while. But like, you're getting something out of that. You are. However, I think you can easily overpay for that and find other options.
Well, here's the thing. And we can kind of do Brandon Marsh after this as well, because I think that some of these decisions are intertwined a little bit here. But like, if you let Harrison Bader walk in free agency, you don't have a center fielder. You just don't have one. It's not Justin Crawford. They don't think he can play defense in center field. We've seen Brandon Marsh in center field. They'd have to get somebody to play center field. So why not get the guy why not bring the guy back who fits seamlessly into the culture, who plays a great defensive center field, and who had a good year with the bat, where you can hope maybe he's able to replicate that. Maybe he's a late bloomer. He figured something out. He's working with Kevin Long or whatever it might happen to be. Maybe I'm changing my mind on this because I'm thinking like,
yeah, I feel like every time I say something, you change it. And now you're saying I'm wrong, that I'm looking wrong.
No, I'm sorry. I think you might be right. I didn't think about the defensive aspect of this a whole lot. I'm just thinking about the negatives of why it would be a bad idea to bring him back. But if you don't re-sign Harrison Bader, you don't have a center field option. You just don't. I mean, you could sign Trent Grisham, you know, but I mean, that has its own warts, you know. I mean, you know, Cody Bellinger, you know, play center. I don't think you want him playing center field. Maybe, I don't know, but you know, it's all right. I'm going to change my mind. I agree with you. I think Harrison Bader, I think they sign him. I think they bring him back. I do. I think they bring him back.
Some of these guys got to go. Some of them got to go, but I don't know how. Why does it feel like there are no other options? There have to be other options.
Trades yeah. for Joe Adell. You know what I mean? Maybe mm-hmm. that's an option. I mean, we can't really foresee the trades that are yeah. out there, the possibilities that are out there. But you know, that could be, you know, if the Angels are at all interested in moving Joe Adell, maybe you have that conversation.
I think the Phillies wind up being interested in bringing back Bader, but he winds up getting a deal that they're not comfortable giving him. I think that's probably the most likely outcome. And then, I think they got to get creative as at center field.
So that he should stay, but that he will go.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I think I agree with you. Should stay, will go. Let's talk about Brandon Marsh. I think he's gone. I think he should go. I think he will go. Because they want to bring up Justin Crawford. The two are redundant. Neither one of them can play center field. You obviously can't platoon them because they both swing from the left side of the plate, and you can't live in a world where you're platooning both left field and right field in 2025 with Justin Crawford, the lefty platoon in left, and Brandon Marsh, the lefty platoon in right, and then find a right-handed partner for each of those guys. Like, I'm not doing that. I don't want to do that. You know, we got to get somebody who can actually play the outfield against pitchers who throw with either arm. Like, we just can't do this for every position. And I think Brandon Marsh has enough trade value after a really solid second half. And really, since May, he was a very good hitter. He's a good defensive left fielder. I think you're redundant there. I think that's a redundant piece. And he's cheap. He doesn't cost much. I think he's got like $5 million in arbitration. I could very easily see any number of teams interested in acquiring Brandon Marsh and taking him on. I would trade Brandon Marsh to make room for Justin Crawford. I think that's, if you're going to promote Justin Crawford, I think that has to happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's the position the Phillies are in here. I go as well. Jason Stark said it's not likely that Marsh will go, but it's more likely that Marsh will go than like Bryson Stott. And he ended the season having become one of the Phillies' top hitters when he was facing the right kind of arm. Like I said, his platoon requirements, and he's under club control for the next two seasons. So, you know, that's a guy you can trade and get somebody back for. If you're looking to make changes, that seems like a ripe candidate.
Yeah, I think you can get a pretty good reliever for Brandon Marsh. And that's kind of what I think you're looking at doing there. You mentioned Bryson Stott. Bryson Stott is such a frustrating player for me. I love the potential that he brings. He's a great defensive second baseman. I'd like to keep him around. I don't see a path to a trade at this point for Bryson Stott, unless they think Aiden Miller is ready right now to kind of step in and play second base or something like that. I don't see a Bryson Stott trade happen. I don't think it's the right time for a Bryson Stott trade at the moment. I don't see how it works. I don't see how it makes the Phillies better to move on from him. Again, unless a whole number of other moves are getting ready to be made. I don't know that Miller can play second base. You could certainly play Sosa at second base if you were to trade Bryson Stott, but he's not an everyday guy. So you're probably looking at a platoon of Bryson Stott and Edmundo Sosa at second base again next year, which, again, at the bottom of a lineup, I think is okay. I would not be against moving Bryson Stott for the right deal. If you've got some kind of, if there's another option there that I'm just not thinking of, if you're going to, you know, I think the idea is eventually Turner moves off a shortstop at some point. It's not going to be for 26. I think he stays. I think he will stay. He probably should stay. I've lost any confidence that Bryson Stott's going to be an all-star. He's not going to be that guy.
Might be time to put those fantasies to bed, but I think of these guys that we consider more movable for the Phillies have invested a lot in Bryson Stott. And I think even more importantly, you'd be selling low on him if you were trading him now. And I think they're just really, really reluctant to do that. Again, unless, you know, you put some kind of plan in place where you wind up better at second base without Bryson Stott on the team, then okay. But like you said, even a second baseman like Stott who does one thing really well has a lot to contribute. Though I do lament that we just don't see an offensive version of Bryson Stott anymore. Yeah. You know, his numbers wound up being like this year between 23 when like the highs he had that year and 2024 with the lows he had that year. This year wound up being between those 2 years with that like little surge he had at the end of the year. So like that was cool and everything, but consistency here is just, it's just not present.
Not there.
And I'm with you. I'm open to moving him, but I feel like the Phillies are more attached to him than they are to Marsh or Bohm.
He's too easy to pitch to. I think he has some very obvious and exploitable holes in his swing. He can't handle velocity. And if you pitch him inside, he has lost the ability to yank the ball onto his pull side. And he said he was trying to do that more during the course of the season. And when he was hitting better, he was pulling the ball more. But he doesn't know what kind of hitter he wants to be. And I think that's the big problem for him. And he can't hit left-handers. He just We want him just as much as you want him to be able to do that thing. Just, he can't do it. He can't
it's
do
not,
it.
It honestly sounds like a lot wrong with a guy you're trying to get a return on.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Very true. All right. Alec Bohm. I think he is gone. I think he's absolutely gone. The tea leaves from Dave Dombrowski, the way he talked about Otto Kemp, the way I think they're working this out is I think Alec Bohm is getting traded this offseason. I don't even know that they really at this point care about accentuating his trade value like they did last offseason. He's an okay player. I've talked about him last week. You know, the numbers are what they are. He's a slightly above average offensive player, not a good defender, and an awful base runner. So you can move him, trade him, and I really don't care if you're trading low, trading high, whatever it happens to be. And the idea here is just you put Otto Kemp at third base, and you roll with Otto Kemp until Aiden Miller is ready to be called up. And I think they're going to play Aiden Miller at third base a lot in AAA this year to start off the season. I wouldn't be surprised if they play Aiden Miller in a corner outfield spot in spring training a lot and getting him a lot of reps in the outfield and at third base so that he can come up and play this year. I think the idea is for Aiden Miller to be on this team this year in some capacity. You need to move Alec Bohm in order to make that happen. And we've seen what Alec Bohm is. He was good in the playoffs this year. He was okay. And I mean, there's just, I can't, he's like a 10 to 12, 15 home run guy who hits maybe 20 doubles a year. Like there's just, for a guy of his size at that position to be a singles hitter, you know, a 280 singles hitter, it's not impactful. He's not impactful. You know, he had that one great stretch in the first half of 24. And other than that, he's just not an impactful player. So he doesn't bring you anything on defense. He doesn't bring you anything in the running game. I think he's gone. I think he should be gone. I think he will be gone.
Yeah. I think if you look at Bryson Stott, you say we can probably find someone who can replace him and improve the offense. We probably cannot find someone who can replace that defense. Whereas with Bohm, I think there's no dimension that isn't more improvable upon. Like the potential to upgrade there is better, I think, than in most of these other cases we're talking about. So I think it's, if you can line up the right trade, I think that's a button you can push and not feel too bad about it. Cause like you said, there's no more questions about Alec Bohm. Like we know what we're getting. We know what the back of that flash card says. And, you know, I think eventually you can learn to live without it.
Yep. 100%. Last one, I threw Aaron Nola in there. You're talking about getting rid of a big contract. Justin, any possibility Aaron Nola is not on the Phillies next year? Let's talk about Aaron Nola.
What I have written down is I can't anymore with this guy. But I know you'll come back with, well, his last appearance of this year was like, it's Aaron Nola. You know, it's the single most infuriating player to watch on the
most
Philadelphia
infuriating
Phillies.
Great player in franchise history. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, again, when his career is over, his legacy is so going to be so bizarre because he's going to have like the second most strikeouts, like second most wins.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say the most insufferable player to be top three in many pitching categories for the Phillies.
Yeah.
Do I think that they are going to get rid of him? No. I don't think so. Nor would I have ever considered that a possibility, a serious possibility going into this winter, really. Who would be after, like, on the one hand, you're just like, who would be after him hard enough to really get him? But then also, who wouldn't be because of how starting pitching starved some of these teams and markets are? Like, I don't know. I don't see them. They locked him up. I think they're going to play this one out.
Yeah, and he's a 10-5 player. So, you know, even if his contract.
Here's the problem. With the Phillies and moving players, the players are in complete control. So for
all the veterans
really,
they are. Yep.
They're not really able to do anything unless the players let them.
Right. So as we went through this, and I agree with you on Aaron Nola on all fronts. So going through this exercise, it basically tells you that you're probably looking at swapping out or getting rid of Brandon Marsh and Alec Bohm. So that you can make room for, at least at the start of the season, Otto Kemp and Justin Crawford. With the idea that Aiden Miller comes in at some point. Now, maybe they go get Alex Bregman if they move on from Alec Bohm or Bo Bichette.
That's going to tick people off too.
Or Eugenio Suarez, but probably not. Right? Probably not.
Probably not. No, I don't think the Phillies are gonna go for Suarez this year. Nope. Coming into the
So the outfield will be very different. The outfield will look very different. It'll be Justin Crawford. It may be Harrison Bader in center field. And then they got to get an everyday right fielder. There's not a great one out there. So maybe that's how you have to get something in a trade or I don't know. But I don't know how good a right fielder you can get unless you're dealing away Justin Crawford or Andrew Painter or Aiden Miller. So there's no free agent superstar right fielder unless you go after Cody Bellinger, which, you know, again, that's a left-hander that you need to get a right-hander in this lineup, another right-hander in this lineup.
Having reasons for nothing to happen.
It's not a good market for the Phillies to fill the needs they need to have filled.
I said they might have one of the more interesting off seasons in baseball, and someone agreed with me.
Couldn't have been me.
This was weeks ago, mind you.
Yeah, but, weeks ago.
Yeah, wow. That's just flat out wrong, huh?
Yeah, it seems like it might be. I don't know. Dave Dombrowski's a Hall of Fame executive. We'll see if he's got any aces up his sleeve. But I'm not optimistic that there's going to be a whole lot of change. And again, they were a 96-win team. You know,
to be fair, John has been in a horrible mood for the entire show. Keep that in mind, folks.
That's right. All right, last thing. Something that could upend everything that we're talking about here. There seems to be a real possibility that the Detroit Tigers are going to trade the best pitcher in baseball this offseason rather than give him the mega deal that he deserves in a contract. And that's, of course, Tarek Skubal, who has 1 year left before free agency. He is by far unquestionably the best pitcher in baseball right now. I can't imagine what the cost would be to obtain him, but it would absolutely involve Andrew Painter and Aiden Miller and more. So if that was the price, Justin, plus, you know, other prospects, and maybe that's where Bryson Stott goes someplace in a deal, you know, would you do that if you're the Phillies? And keep in mind, I'm going to slay a couple other things out here because you've got Zach Wheeler. You don't know what you're getting from him when he comes back. Aaron Nola, you were counting on Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola being like your two horses for the next couple of years. Like this was part of the window. And you just don't, those are two absolute wild card question marks now heading into 26. You're not going to have Ranger Suarez back. We didn't talk about him, but I think I left him off because I think everybody believes he's going to be gone. So you have Sanchez and Luzardo and then Wheeler and then Nola and then Andrew Painter and Taijuan Walker. Suddenly the starting rotation for 26 doesn't look as rock solid as it once did. And you win with starting pitching in the regular season. Starting pitching is a low-key need this offseason for the Phillies, which is incredible to say. Would you blow up basically like the part of the future of your team with Andrew Painter, Aiden Miller, trade for Tarek Skubal to give you a ridiculous front of the rotation and possibly just one of the best rotations we've ever seen if Wheeler and Nola bounce back? And, you know, sign Skubal to a mega extension, he would probably get more than Bryce Harper or Trey Turner are getting at this point.
Yes. Yep. I would do that. Mm-hmm. I was a little surprised at how much sense it made to me. But, you know, it's just the logic of, look, prospects are prospects. And it's great to factor guys like Painter and Miller into the Phillies' future. Really enjoyed their success thus far and their development and everything. But ultimately, if you can get Tarek Skubal, that's what you're like kind of hoping Andrew Painter is, you know, down the line. So now instead of wondering that, because, you know, he ran into some obstacles this year and it's going to be a little more time in the minors than I think people thought. And that's perfectly fine. And he could totally come out the other side of this and be every bit the pitcher that he was projected to be. It's totally, totally on the table.
Yep.
But if you could just skip ahead to him already being the best pitcher in baseball for the cost of, you know, giving him up and, you know, Miller. But again, for Skubal, I'm willing to do that. You're talking about throwing Stott in there. Yeah, you know, that's fine. I don't know. All these guys that I'm okay moving, this is the kind of deal that makes you okay moving him. Because, yeah, like you said, this really addresses a startling need for starting pitching for the Phillies with the best guy available to fill that role. And he's 28 years old. So, yeah, you can bring him in, lock him down, and now you got an A number one starter to go with whoever else is around with from your very good pitching staff.
I do it too. I really want this team to start building from the inside, and to start being able to churn out good players from the farm system, like star players from the farm system. It's been a long time. You know, Bryson Stott and Alec Bohm were fine players, but they didn't become stars, you know, and they were former number one picks, you know, first round picks. They haven't really churned out a star offensive player since Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, and Ryan Howard. Those are the last ones. And so you really would love to see them be able to do that. You'd love to see Justin Crawford and Aiden Miller become those guys. Andrew Painter become a young homegrown ace that they haven't been able to develop since Cole Hamels. But yeah, it's Tarek Skubal, man. I'm getting Tarek Skubal in a postseason window here with this Bryce Harper era that, you know, has a few years left. So yeah, I'm doing that, holding my nose, and then I'm just like praying that the farm system can replace those guys. That's, you know, why you continue to draft every year, and that's why you develop guys, and you know, that's why you're going to have this coordinator position to, you know, be a liaison between the AAA and the major league team. But yeah, Tarek Skubal, you get him. It's prime Roy Halladay. It's you know, the best pitcher probably of his generation. You're looking maybe a Clayton Kershaw type resume when all is said and done from Tarek Skubal. So yeah, I agree.
What if you had to give up Justin Crawford and keep Brandon Marsh?
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah,
I'd still.
I
do
think
that.
I would too. Yeah,
I'd still do that. But like, you're giving up Painter, Miller, and Justin Crawford, all three of them?
I don't think you'd have to worry about that. Or are you just like, asking, would I?
Would I do all three of them for Skubal? Probably.
No one else? Probably, yeah.
Yeah, probably do that. Again, because I don't know that Justin Crawford is going to be he doesn't hit well enough to be a star left fielder.
Right.
He's not, like, he doesn't hit home runs, you know, unless that part of his game is going to develop. You know, he's going to be, at his best, he's going to be a 300 hitter with a 340 on base and maybe a 400 slugging, you know, like a 780 to 800 OPS guy in left field. Okay, you know, I'll take that, but that's something that you can find elsewhere, you know. So, I would do it for those three guys. Yeah. All right. That's good enough for this week. Any other final thoughts from you, Justin, as we wrap up the podcast?
I look forward to changing my opinions about what the Phillies are going to do with each individual player throughout the rest of the winter.
Me too. Depending on the winds and how things happen in the world, things that have nothing to do with the Phillies. Sometimes, sure, that'll absolutely affect my opinion on these different kinds of things. So we got the World Series coming up this week. Hope everybody enjoys the Fall Classic between the Blue Jays and the Dodgers. I imagine we are all rooting for the Blue Jays in this particular case, although I can't say it's a strong rooting interest in Toronto for me anyway. That's what we've got. Those are the cards that have been dealt us here as Phillies fans. Folks, this podcast, the Roundtable, will be up on the WHYY YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe to the WHYY YouTube feed so that you can watch the show. And we're going to be with you all during the course of the offseason. We'll be doing our Roundtable episodes and any extra podcasts as news warrants during the course of the week. So still a great time to follow along with the hot stove and whatever else the Phillies are going to do or not do this offseason to improve the team in 2026. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.